Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one on your touch-tone phone to ask a question. I'd also like to inform all parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Ms. Barbara Reynolds. Thank you, ma'am. You may begin.
Good afternoon. You're joining CDC's Daily Update on the Ebola Response. I'm Barbara Reynolds, the Director of Public Affairs at CDC. Today you'll be hearing from three speakers, and then we'll take questions. Our first speaker today is CDC Director Dr. Tom Frieden. Dr. Frieden?
Hello, everyone. It is exactly 1 week since the first patient with Ebola in this country was diagnosed in Dallas, Texas. And it's a good time to look back on what's happened in that week and say all of the things that have happened and where we are and where we're likely to be going. The patient was diagnosed on Tuesday. Within about 2 hours, we announced that. That evening, we had staff on the ground helping the terrific staff in Dallas and Texas to respond to this case. And we have no doubt that we will stop it in its tracks in Texas. It's worth stepping back and saying how Ebola spreads. Ebola only spreads by direct contact with someone who's sick or with their body fluids. So the core of control is identifying everyone who might have had contact with them and making sure they're monitored for 21 days, and if they develop symptoms, immediately isolating them to break the chain of transmission. There's no doubt that we can stop Ebola in this country. Today I'd like to spend a minute talking about what's happening in Dallas and then turn to my colleagues there, then about what's happening in the U.S. more broadly, and finally, where we are with the epidemic in West Africa. In terms of Dallas, the work there by the staff of the local and state health departments with CDC assistance has been terrific. They've been able to assess all 114 individuals who might possibly have had contact. Of those, they were able to rule out that 66 did not have contact. They identified 10 who appear to have had contact with the individual when he might possibly have been infectious. Of those 10, 7 are healthcare workers and 3 are family or community contacts. In addition, there are about 38 other people in whom we could not rule out that they had contact. And so all of those 48 people will be tracked for 21 days to determine whether they have fever. And if any develop fever, they will be immediately isolated, tested, and if they have Ebola, given appropriate care and determine whether there were any additional contacts to their case. That's how we have stopped every outbreak of Ebola in the world until this one in West Africa, and that's how we stopped it in Lagos, Nigeria, and that's how we will stop it in Texas. Going on to the U.S. situation, we've seen a lot of understandable concern. Because of the deadly nature of Ebola, and we're really hoping for the recovery of the patient in Dallas, we understand that his situation has taken a turn for the worse. We know that Ebola is a very serious disease, and we're hoping for his recovery. But because it's such a deadly disease, people are scared, and it's normal to be scared. In fact, for the healthcare workers who are caring for people with Ebola, we want them to be scared. We want them to have a healthy respect of the risk of any lapse in infection control procedure. We want them to channel that fear into being incredibly meticulous about infection control. Many people have pointed out that initially the individual was not diagnosed. And we have done a lot at CDC, and we'll be doing a lot more in the coming days and weeks to inform and empower not just doctors, but nurses, healthcare professionals of all kinds to think about Ebola. Anyone who's been in Guinea, Liberia, or Sierra Leone in the past 21 days and has a fever or any other symptoms suggestive of Ebola, and to make sure that our index of suspicion is such that if that happens, we rapidly isolate them, assess them, and if indicated, test for Ebola. CDC has already done reached hundreds of thousands of healthcare professionals with alerts information, materials, tools, webinars at least once a week, and we will continue to ramp that up, working closely with medical associations, with groups of doctors and nurses and others. And this basic issue of making sure that at this time Ebola remains top of mind in people who've had a travel history is something that we will continue to focus on. At CDC, we've seen the level of interest increase. In fact, we were getting about 50 calls or emails per day before the initial patient was diagnosed here. It's up to about 800 calls or emails per day, and we understand the level of concern. We also understand that people would like to do everything possible to keep Ebola out of the U.S., and we agree with that 100%. Our top priority at CDC is to protect Americans from threats. We work 24/7 to do that. In this case, we're doing that by many different ways. One of them is working to stop the outbreak at its source in Africa, because as long as cases continue there, there's a possibility that someone will travel, infect someone else, come into this country or another country, and possibly have another case of Ebola. As long as the outbreak is continuing in Africa, there is a risk in other places. We've long said it, and it's worth repeating, that an outbreak anywhere is potentially a threat everywhere. But that doesn't mean we can't do anything. One of the things that we do is to make sure that everyone leaving those countries is intensively screened, with their temperature being taken, questions being asked, and being observed to see if they appear to be ill. That screening has, in recent months, removed 77 people who would have boarded planes to leave those three countries and didn't, because of the screening that CDC staff helped those countries implement. And I can assure you that the leadership of each of those three countries wants to make sure that screening is as good as it can be, because they need the airlines to keep flying. Otherwise, they won't be able to keep their societies moving, and we won't be able to stop the outbreak there. In addition, of course, we work with healthcare workers around the country, so there's rapid identification of cases. And, of course, we're now looking at the issue of entry screening, and we're looking at all possibilities. There have been suggestions from people in Congress, from the public, from the media. We'll look at those and see what works to protect Americans and to make sure that whatever we do doesn't unintentionally actually increase our risk. If we make it harder to fight the outbreak in West Africa, we actually increase our own risk. So those are the criteria that we're using, working across the U.S. government. There are many agencies focused on this, and we'll be committed to doing whatever we can to further increase the safety of Americans. Getting finally to the issue of what's happening in West Africa today, the situation remains very fluid. It's striking. When I speak with the CDC leaders who are there, and we've sent now 135 of our top disease detectives, and they're working not only at the national level, but down to the county and district level in each of the three countries, one of the things that's quite striking is the diversity of the experience. This isn't West Africa. This is three individual countries. Each of the individual countries has its own patterns of disease spread. In some of them, there are districts that have not had a case of Ebola. In some, there are just a handful of cases in some of those districts. So we're moving to looking at each of the 62 districts across these three countries to see what more can be done to cone down this forest fire, to prevent it from spreading to areas it hasn't spread yet, to put out the sparks where it's spread to some places, and places where it's got a huge problem, to isolate as many people as rapidly as possible. We've seen real progress in the response over the past 1 to 2 weeks. The Department of Defense being on the ground has made a big difference. They're already moving out and helping with operations. We've also seen USAID very effectively increase support for families that want to respectfully and safely bury the people who've died. And that's very important because it reduces the spread of Ebola. So while we're still not ahead of it, we're certainly getting further along than we were before. I'm looking forward to briefing President Obama on the situation in West Africa tomorrow and to further ensuring that the President's direction that we move rapidly to do as much as we can to stop this is what we are doing not only at CDC, not only across the U.S. government, but globally, because we're seeing a tremendous global coalition committed to doing this. So that's a bit about where we are in Dallas, in the U.S., and globally. And before I turn it over to my colleagues in Texas, just to highlight that one thing that happened that didn't get much notice in this past week, because it happened to be on Tuesday, the day that we announced the diagnosis, is that we published a report on what happened in Nigeria. When they had a single case and they didn't do any infection control, they ended up with 19 secondary cases, additional cases, but because of a rapid public health response, effectively tracking nearly 900 contacts, it appears that they've been able to stop the outbreak in Nigeria. Though we can't give the all clear yet, it does look like the outbreak is over there because of good public health action. I'm confident that anywhere we apply the fundamental principles of infection control and public health follow-up, we can stop Ebola.
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. Next speaker is Dr. David Lakey, who is the commissioner of the Texas Department of State Health Services. Dr. Lakey?
Well, good afternoon. This is David Lakey, the Commissioner of Health from the state of Texas. And again, I want to thank Dr. Frieden for the support of the CDC as we're working on this effort right now. It's one effort and it's one team. As I start off, I again want to say that my thoughts and prayers and our thoughts and prayers are with the patient right now. Obviously, he's critically ill, but also with the family as they're going through this event and the contacts that have been identified that are obviously have concern about what's going on with them right now, and with the hospital workers that are caring for this ill patient right now. As I said earlier, we're doing our work in partnership with the CDC and our local health department here in the state of Texas. A lot of very important hard work is taking place right here in Texas, in Dallas, to ensure that the people of Dallas are safe. The good news is that we have had no more cases, and no one has reported any symptoms, and we're happy about that, and we're reassured, but we're still very cautious to make sure we continue to care for individuals, monitor the situation the way it needs to be done. Our focus here is to closely monitor every contact and the possible contacts, and to identify all the and we have identified all the contacts, and our priority in public health is to continue tracking those individuals. We want to make sure that we are closely monitoring them, and that's what we are focused on. Also, as we are monitoring individuals, as we identify needs that they may have, we're working through our incident command structure to make sure those issues are addressed, making sure that the food issues are identified, or if the electricity was turned off during the storm, that those issues are resolved. We've also, the neighbors obviously have had concerns, and we've tried to provide health educators in the community to help address those issues. Our focus is to make sure that you are informed of what's going on and understand how the public health system works and what the risk may be. The public health system works to prevent and contain these risks. And I know it's been noted several times, but obviously a lot of people are listening right now. I want to reemphasize that Ebola is not spread by the air. People are not contagious unless they have symptoms. This can't be stated enough, and I think it needs to be reassuring to the individuals that are listening today. There are hospitals across the state of Texas and across the nation that are on the lookout for any additional cases, and that's what we want. We want hospitals to be on high alert and to identify individuals that have a travel history to the areas that are affected and to come in with any symptoms that could be consistent with Ebola, so these individuals can be identified quickly and that healthcare workers can be protected. They're going to call on us, and that's exactly the way we want the system to work, so that when they're identified as a concern, that they can get the testing that needs to be done. So we're all on high alert right now, and that's where we believe it should be. We continue to plan for contingencies, and a lot of work is taking place to make sure that whatever happens, that we are as prepared as we need to be to address those issues. So again, Dr. Frieden, I want to thank you for the partnership between the CDC and the state of Texas and Dallas City and County as we work together to ensure the safety of the people in Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lakey. Our final speaker is Dallas County Judge Clay Lewis Jenkins. Judge Jenkins.
Good morning and happy Sunday to everyone on the call. I want to start off by thanking all of the people who are currently being monitored and their families. I realize that when you're being monitored, even with a low risk for Ebola, it is a a very unsettling and frankly terrifying process to worry about. And I am praying for all of you, and many others are as well. This morning I had the opportunity to participate in half of a mass. And it was a mass by the Bishop of the Archdiocese of Dallas for the Catholic Church, where 1.2 million Catholics are under his leadership. And the sermon was on Ebola and remaining calm and showing compassion and our duties to our fellow man. I know that is a message that is being preached throughout synagogues, churches, and mosques in the Dallas County area. And so I want to thank the faith community for stepping up, for the faith leader who found the home for Louise and the three young men, and for all the faith leaders who have stepped up, as you always do, in times of crisis. I want the public to remember we had the same sort of concerns, and some people had the same types of panic when we had the West Nile virus outbreak in 2012. I'm speaking to you from our EOC here in Dallas County. Sitting directly next to me is David Lakey of the state of Texas, our state's public health commissioner and highest authority on the public health, and Dave Daigle from the CDC. These are the two men that embedded in Dallas County in my offices and were at my side when we stopped the West Nile virus outbreak in 2012, and we will contain this Ebola situation as well. We are as the news reports have come out, I'll answer the first question ahead of time. We are working to find a low-risk individual who has been identified as a contact. We have our Dallas County Sheriff's Department and Dallas Police Department teams on the ground now, and they've been there since last night. We are working to locate the individual and get him to a comfortable, compassionate place where we can monitor him and care for his every need during the full monitoring period. I want to stress to you, this person has not committed a crime. They are a low-risk individual, and I emphasize low-risk individual, and we are doing this as a precautionary measure. Again, I want to thank everyone. I want the staff of Homeland Security and Emergency Management and Dallas County Health and Human Services EPI team, as well as my executive staff, for all of their hours and hours of work on very little sleep. Oh, and the individual was seen yesterday. The low-risk individual I just spoke of was seen yesterday, was monitored, and is an asymptomatic, low-exposure individual. So remember what we talked about. For those of you who are not medical reporters, asymptomatic people have zero chance of contracting the Ebola virus from an asymptomatic individual. We just need to locate this individual, and we could use your help in letting them know they're not in trouble. We want to move them to a comfortable and compassionate place and care for their every need while we monitor them throughout the monitoring period. All right, and with that, I'll turn it over for questions.
Thank you, Judge Jenkins. We're now going to open the room for questions and by phone through the operator. Thank you.
And again, for parties on the phone, if you'd like to ask a question, star 1 and record your name clearly when prompted.
In the room first.
Dr. Friedman, Steve Gelbach from WSB-TV. Can you talk about this patient in Dallas? Seemed to have taken a turn for the worse. Are they getting the same treatment, those patients we saw here in Atlanta and Nebraska who seem to get better? Is there some different treatment or a reason why they haven't taken to this treatment?
Ebola is a very serious infection and unfortunately can be fatal in many of the people who get the infection. Some patients received an experimental treatment known as ZMAP. That is three specific antibodies, but there were a very small number of those doses in the world, and my understanding is they're all gone. It takes a long time to make more of that medicine, so it's not going to be available anytime soon. There's a second experimental medicine again, both of these medicines, we don't know if they work or not, but there are two experimental medicines that may be promising, at least in animal models. The second medicine can be difficult to use and can actually make someone sicker, at least initially. So the doctors, the patient's family would be the deciding factor of whether or not to use that, but if they wanted to, they would have access to it.
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. I'm Michelle Merrill with Hospital Employee Health Newsletter. So I have two questions. The first one has to do with protections for healthcare workers. The CDC guidance currently is that healthcare workers wear a face mask. There are some experts in respiratory protection who have argued that the precautionary principle says that in the absence of absolute certainty in terms of the mode of transmission, that higher levels of protection should be used. And certainly the other patients in the United States who had Ebola were treated in high containment settings. What is your recommendation? What are healthcare workers using in terms of respiratory protection?
The key with Ebola is to make sure that the barrier and other precautions are strictly followed. And where we've seen lapses in infection control in Africa that have resulted in spread, it's been often because of a problem either putting on or taking off the protective equipment. That can be an area of risk. If you take it off and don't do it carefully, you might contaminate yourself by mistake. It's very clear from everything we've seen in Africa, from everything that we've seen over the last 40 years with this virus, that the spread is nowhere near as contagious as something like flu or measles or TB or even the common cold. That catching it requires direct contact. And there's an interesting clue here. Over the past decade, though we have not had until now any patients with Ebola in the U.S., we've had five patients in the U.S. who had other hemorrhagic fevers caused by viruses. Four were from a virus called Lassa fever, one Marburg. Marburg is very similar to Ebola. None of those five patients were initially diagnosed. None of them were cared for with any special precautions beyond what we generally do, and there were no secondary infections in any of those cases. And in fact, for the woman who had Marburg, she underwent surgery before anyone knew that she had the Marburg infection. So the standard precautions work, but they have to be very rigorously applied. And if hospitals want to be have additional safeguards, that's entirely up to them. But we have, for many years, in fact, decades, cared for patients in Africa with these conditions and not had infections as long as the infection control procedures are strictly followed. It's not a question of being highly infectious. It's a question of making sure that the precautions that are taken are strictly and meticulously adhered to.
And I just had a second question. You mentioned seven healthcare workers are among those being monitored. When the patient first appeared at the hospital, routine blood work was taken. Did your net include the people in the laboratory who were handling those blood specimens?
Yes, we've looked at all potential exposures within the hospital context. We'll go to the phone for the first question.
Our first question is from Elizabeth Cohen with CNN. Go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Frieden and everybody else. Thanks so much for having this press conference. Dr. Frieden, can you tell us, is the Dallas patient, is he receiving PK from Ebola or any other medicine besides supportive care?
I actually didn't hear the specifics of your question. Is he receiving, what did you ask?
PKM Ebola or any other medicine besides supportive care?
As far as we understand, experimental medicine is not being used. As I mentioned earlier, the medication you mentioned can be quite difficult for patients to take and may transiently worsen their condition. So it's really up to his treating physicians, himself, his family, of what treatment to take. Supportive care, managing fluids, supporting the patient's vital functions, these are all critical issues to be addressed. Next question on the phone.
Our next question is from Donna Young with Scrip News. Go ahead, your line is open.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I had a question about the difference between why you've got the physician that was exposed in Sierra Leone being monitored or treated at the NIH, as opposed to the Duncan family and friends, why they were kept under guard in an apartment complex and now moved to a private home. Why are they not being monitored in a medical facility when you've got, you know, another person being monitored at the National Institutes of Health Clinical Center? And then also, when will the CDC make public the status of the doctor at the NIH, and has he actually been tested for Ebola? Thank you.
So for any questions on individuals, you have to consult the treating facility, and they would consult the family, and that's who would make available any information. The situation in NIH, it's a clinical research center where clinical research is done, and you'd have to refer any questions to them. In terms of the contacts in Texas, I'll make a brief comment and then turn it over to Dr. Leahy or Judge Jenkins to add. The concern for anyone who's had contact is not that they may infect other people. Judge Jenkins said it exactly right. They are not a risk to others. The only thing we need to ensure is that their temperature is monitored, and if they develop a fever, that they're immediately assessed, isolated, and if found to be positive, then appropriately cared for. The authorities in Texas determined that the only way to ensure that for certain individuals that temperature gets monitored daily was to take the actions that they took. Dr. Leahy?
Thanks, Tom. No, I think that's correct. We put in a control order to ensure that we could protect the public's health and safety, and monitor these individuals and do everything we can to monitor it very compassionately and care for their needs. We feel very comfortable where the individuals are at this time. Obviously, there were challenges in getting them into that location, but things are going well with them now, and we again have individuals that are working with them daily, monitoring them, taking their temperature, and we feel very comfortable that they're in a safe environment at this time. Judge, you've been working directly with them and transported them to the house. Anything you would like to add to that?
Sure. If you were in the hospital and this were your family, you'd want them to be in the kind of place that we have this family in. Their medical monitoring is excellent, and we're doing everything that needs to be done that could be done in a hospital, which just consists essentially of checking their temperature and their vitals twice a day. And without getting into the specifics of the children or the individuals, we got a young man who's enjoying playing basketball now. And he can't be doing that in a hospital. And I'm also mindful, even though the science on this is clear, Ebola was discovered in 1976, and the experts who are working on this with us, hand in hand as one team, are the same experts who've been working on it everywhere it's reared its head in the last, 40 years. Even though that's true, if I put this family in a hospital, there are going to be people that are afraid to go to the hospital. I need our citizens to know that Presbyterian and every other hospital in Dallas County is safe, and if you need medical care, you need to go to the hospital. Frankly, I'm more concerned about bad outcomes if we overcrowd emergency rooms with panic, or if people stop using Presbyterian, which is a great hospital, then I am about statistically the chance of this disease spreading. So that was the thought process in moving them to a location away from other individuals that is a more restful and appropriate place for young people.
Thank you. Next question on the phone.
Our next question is from Anna Compoy with Wall Street Journal. Go ahead, your line is open.
Yes, hi. I was wondering if you could tell us more about this individual that you're looking for. Is he or she one of the 50 that you were monitoring? And what kind of contact did he or she have with Mr. Duncan? And have you had other people who have gone missing like him or her? in the past few days.
So I will outline the overall and then turn to Dr. Lakey. The individual who is being sought now was monitored yesterday, so he hasn't yet missed a day of monitoring. And though he's gone missing, I'm confident that the folks in Texas found him before and can find him again. The nature of his contact was considered low risk. He's, if you recall, I identified two groups. One, a group of 10 who we think definitely appear to have had contact. It may not have been substantial contact, but it was contact. The other group of about 38 who might have had contact, and he was in that group who might have had contact. For the 10 who did, all of them have been monitored each day since they were identified. None of them have symptoms. None of them have fever. And I do want to highlight, although we've kind of described that as a higher or a definite contact, this isn't something like a needle stick or a splash of infected fluid. This is someone who might have touched the patient. So not a very high risk, but definite contact. But this individual was not in that group of 10 who had definite contact. Dr. Lakey?
No, Tom, I just want to echo your comments there. This is a low contact individual that had been identified, that was seen yesterday, and did not have any fever yesterday. But that we believe that we need to, again, work to make sure we work to locate him, to make sure he has continued to be monitored compassionately. And you know, as been noted, he's homeless. We're working very hard to address that issue so we have a controlled environment to monitor him, and that's the work that's taking place right now, and to ensure that his every need is met during this time when we're monitoring him. And so, you know, if he's listening to right now, again, we want to make sure that we address his needs and we monitor him compassionately, and that it's a very low-risk situation, and we want to be careful and compassionate as we care for him. Thank you.
Yeah, let me add something to that, if he is listening to this. I'm the person who took that family in my personal car to where they are now. It's a great place. We'd like to find a great place to monitor you as well. You have my word that your every need will be taken care of during that monitoring period, and we want to help you and help the public to know that you're being monitored. We need your help coming to us or going to an officer and letting them know who you are, and they will contact me and I'll come to you and we'll work out your every need. Thank you.
We have another question in the room.
Dr. Fried, Johnny Clark with Associated Press. You mentioned in your opening statement that unfortunately the patient in Texas has taken a turn for the worse. Can you give us any details of the complications that he's experiencing?
I'd have to refer you to the hospital for that in terms of the complications. We know that Ebola is a deadly disease and can affect many parts of the body, so it can be very challenging to support the vital functions while the patient's natural immune system is trying to fight it off. Next question on the phone.
Next question is from Rob Stein with NPR. Go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, hi, thanks for taking my question. Just following up on the person you're trying to locate, can you tell us a little bit more about what you're doing to try to locate this person other than sort of making this public appeal?
I think that was a question on how to the efforts underway to locate the individual that hasn't been located. Dr. Lakey or Judge Jenkins?
This is Judge Jenkins. I'll take that. Well, I guess we're the boots on the ground on locating him. We have law enforcement and other first responders agencies going to places. We're using the same sort of data points that we use to find anyone that we're looking for, and we're making that a top-tier effort to locate this individual. And I want to stress again, not because he's committed any kind of a crime or is in any sort of trouble whatsoever, but because we have a great place for him to stay, and we're going to attend to his every need, and we need the individual to help us by coming forward and being a hero for his community by letting us help him.
Thank you. Next question on the phone.
Next question comes from Mark Santoro with New York Times. Go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, hi, thank you. I was just hoping you might be able to give us a little more detail on what happened at Newark Airport yesterday. Specifically, I'm curious how you were able to so quickly rule out Ebola. Was blood work done? And if so, are the tests that are being done speeding up in terms of how fast you're able to get the results?
Once that patient's detailed history and clinical examination was done, it became clear that the symptoms that that individual had were not consistent with Ebola. They were consistent with another minor illness that was from which he was recovering, and he was released from the hospital feeling well. I think, as I said yesterday, we do expect that there will be more concerns, more rumors, more possible cases, and what we'll do is ensure that we respond rapidly in each such case. If someone has traveled to one of the three countries that continues to have spread of Ebola and has symptoms consistent with Ebola, key is to isolate them immediately, get testing done, and if they're positive, take appropriate action. In this case, the symptoms were not consistent with Ebola, and the testing identified another obvious source, and he was better and went on his way. Next question.
Next question is from Evan Brown with Fox News Radio. Go ahead, your line is open. Evan, your line is now open. Please check your mute button or pick up your handset.
We'll go to the next question.
Okay, next question is from Lisa Schernering with CID RAP News.
Hi, thanks for being available today. Just kind of a quick housekeeping question for myself and other journalists. The week ahead, I know you have a briefing with President Obama tomorrow. To the best of your knowledge today, are there any like congressional hearings or other big meetings for people to kind of keep an eye on? Thanks so much.
We'll take it one day at a time and see what gets scheduled and when. We look forward to continuing to work collaboratively. I've been really encouraged by the interest and commitment and support we've gotten from everybody in Washington. People understand that we're all in this together, that there are clear things that we've got to do, that it's hard, it's going to be a long, hard road, but that working together we can stop Ebola. We can stop it here, and we can control it in Africa. Next question in the room.
Dr. Frieden, now that we are a week out and you're looking back, is there anything you can learn from really the experience not only at the airport but in the hospital, the screening process, generically as we look to other airports in other cities, other hospitals, other healthcare facilities, when it's really based on the forthcomingness of that person and their travel history when they may not be so forthcoming?
It's clear that we need to increase the confidence of the U.S. system and the reliability of finding out about travel history and rapidly isolating people who may have traveled to any one of these three countries and have a fever. We learn from the past. We recognize that we can't always be perfect, and we learn from that experience to say what can be better next time. So we're intensively informing everyone in the healthcare system who could have contact with someone who's coming in to think about Ebola and keep it top of mind. We obviously had some challenges over the past week dealing with medical waste. As it happened, that issue we thought had been resolved the previous week, and just before this patient was diagnosed, it was a glitch in removal of medical waste. That's now been resolved. But every time we have a new situation, we learn from it. We say, what could we do differently and better the next time? Next question on the phone.
Our next question is from Sean Sullivan with Washington Post. Go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you for taking my question. I wanted to ask whether the doctors who are treating the patient for Ebola in Dallas are considering giving him any blood transfusions from any of the survivors, anybody who's been treated successfully, either Dr. Brantley or anybody else.
You'd have to refer that question to the hospital unless, Dr. Lakey, you have anything to comment.
I do not have any comments. Thank you.
Next question.
Next question is from Denver Nix with Time Magazine. Go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for taking a moment. I just wanted to clarify, the fellow that you're looking for, the low-risk potential contact, does he know that you're looking for him? Have you been in touch with him before?
David or Clay?
I'll start out, and the answer is yes, he does. We were able to bring him in yesterday and again, monitor him, check his temperature, evaluate him, and we told him to stay there and that we needed to follow him, and he left, and that's why we've kind of escalated this to make sure that we, again, are able to closely monitor him. Judge?
Well, I think that answered the question, didn't unless you got a follow-up.
Okay, no, that's fine. Thank you.
Next question on the phone.
Next question is from Caroline Chen with Bloomberg News. Go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if you could clarify what happened at the hospital when Duncan first walked in, because they previously sent out a message saying that there was a problem with their electronic health record system. Then they sent out a new statement saying there was no flaw with their health record system. It's not clear to me what had happened, whether it was human error. Could you clarify?
Dr. Lakey, do you want to address that?
Dr. Frieden, I think the hospital is the entity that needs to answer that question about what occurred in the hospital on that day.
Yeah.
They have not, they said that they are not going to give any further explanation at this time. So we do have two separate statements that are conflicting at this time.
What I can say is that the care of patients is complex, and you have to recognize that lots of people come into emergency departments every day. That's why we've provided checklists and algorithms. That's why we're working with the emergency department, physician and nursing groups to ensure or do everything we can so that whenever someone comes in, the travel history is taken, and if there are symptoms consistent with Ebola, they're immediately isolated and treated. We'll take two more questions on the phone and one more in the room. First, one on the phone.
Next question is from Leanne Winnick with CBS News. Go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. Could you elaborate on your comment earlier about not limiting travel from these countries and how that would exacerbate the epidemic if we let people out, or is it the concern that we won't be allowing healthcare workers in?
There are a series of things that have to happen if we're going to control the outbreak. And if we don't control the outbreak, there's a real risk it could spread to other countries in Africa and then be an ongoing risk that we would have to deal with for months or even years. So it's really important, not just to Africa, but to the U.S. and the world, that we stop the outbreak. And to do that, we need regular travel. We need the countries not being completely isolated from the world. I understand there have been calls to shut off all flights. This would be very damaging to the countries. It would be very damaging to the ability to get help in, for people to be willing to go to help and be able to get out. When I was in Liberia, the health-keeping force from the African Union was coming. They've already sent dozens of workers. They want to send dozens more. They're very helpful. But their response was delayed by about a week because Senegal stopped flights between Senegal and the West African countries. And that delayed the response, and ironically, that probably increased the risk that Senegal will have imported cases in the future. So we are totally committed as our number one priority to protecting Americans. We have to ensure that whatever we do doesn't inadvertently increase that risk by making it harder to stop the outbreak in Africa. On the phone?
Our final question will be from Amanda Chan with the Huffington Post. Go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my questions. I had two. The first one, I just wanted to clarify the 10 that you considered high risk. You said that 3 were relatives or community members and 7 were healthcare workers. But from my understanding, the 4 relatives of Duncan are being quarantined. Wouldn't they be 4 relatives then? Can you clarify those numbers? And then also, how long do symptoms have to set in before you're able to test for Ebola? Because I'm wondering why these high-risk individuals just aren't tested right now, so you would just know.
So you can't spread Ebola unless you have symptoms, and you can't test for it accurately. The test will be negative until there are symptoms. In fact, when Ebola first comes on, the amount of virus that someone excretes or sheds is very low. So initially, a test might even be negative for someone with an initial fever. As someone gets sicker and sicker, they get more and more infectious because there's more and more virus in their body. In terms of the household and community contacts, what we've identified is people who either did have definite touch or contact with the individual and individuals who may have had that contact. And you can figure out from the numbers we've given that not all of those who were identified as having been in the household definitely had contact. And I think we end with a question in the room.
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. I had a question about the 7 healthcare workers, the high risk. Are they being quarantined in the same fashion? Are they being required to stay in their home? What other, is there law enforcement presence, and what about their interaction with their family members and so forth?
So it's really important to emphasize here that the only thing we need to ensure with contacts is that their temperature is measured every day. And the only reason Texas took the step that it did with those four individuals is that they couldn't ensure that their temperatures would be measured every day. There was no risk to others from those individuals, as Judge Jenkins outlined very clearly. In terms of the healthcare workers, it's really up to the hospital what to do and how to do that. Dr. Lakey, do you want to comment on that, or I could add some detail if you'd like?
I can just add a little bit of detail. The individuals obviously have been contacted. They're being monitored. There's no problems there. The hospital has allowed them to stay home with pay, so they're not interacting with any patients. But there's no problem. We've had no difficulty in monitoring them in their current situation. Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Jenkins, do you have any final words before we close this press availability?
I guess in closing, I would say thank you to the members of the media who are helping to get out the accurate information about, how this disease is spread and what people should be concerned about and what they should not be concerned about. It's very important that we follow the science and don't overreact in the situation, and your work on that is helping tremendously, so thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Lakey, anything to add?
Again, I want to thank the CDC for our partnership in this. I do want to thank the media. It's very important that we get information out and accurate information out related to the real risk and what are not risk. And so your partnership in this is important. And again, to the family members and the contacts, our thoughts and prayers are with you as we work through this current situation. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. And thanks also to the team in Texas that's doing such a terrific job here. The bottom line is that we're stopping Ebola in its tracks in Dallas. We're working throughout the U.S. to increase the level of tracking for any possible cases so that if other patients come in, they can be promptly isolated. And we're continuing to surge the response in Africa to stop Ebola at the source so that we don't have to deal with it in the coming years. Thank you all so much for covering this.
Hey, Tom.
Thank you.
One thing that we forgot to say, or I'm not sure that we said, if y'all are still on, please let everyone that's being monitored know that our faith community here, across ideologies and sects, our faith community here is making today a day of prayer for you in their houses of worship. If you're being monitored, you're in the thoughts and prayers of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.